welcome to the 27th episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. It's Wednesday the 28th of August, and in this episode we're going to discuss what's been in the news. We'll also talk about the latest happenings in the Ubuntu community, and if you're watching or listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. We are currently broadcasting live on Google Hangouts, so if you go somewhere, you'll be able to find a URL. Where?
Go to our Twitter thing, just to maximise. Go to
twitter.com/UPC.
And then you can click the link to YouTube from there.
Yeah. And we'll be there.
And also we'll be releasing the video, assuming it all records okay, afterwards.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah. So you haven't missed out.
The fun, you can still
I've just posted the links into IRC.
You can see our semi-obscured faces with microphones on video.
Yes.
It's like having an orange nose.
Our pixelated faces.
So anyway, I'm Laura. Ah. And joining me this week are Mark.
Hi, Laura.
Alan.
Hello.
And Tony.
Good evening. Hi.
There's the enthusiasm you've all been waiting for. So.
Yeah.
I think we just have to get on.
Are you going to stick around for the whole show this time?
I'll try.
Okay. Slack off this time.
Yeah. Okay, let's get on with it.
It's time for the news. And in the first item this week, Google have been accused of intentionally preventing the new Chromecast dongle from playing locally stored media. So for those who don't know, the Chromecast is a $35 dongle that plugs into the HDMI port on your TV and gets its power from a USB port, and you can stream video straight onto your TV from selected services. And a chap by the name of Kushik Dutta created a third-party Aircast app for the Chromecast, and he found that in the latest update, they've removed support for the video playback API he was using.
Right. What's Aircast? Sorry.
So this was a tool that allowed you to stream other content to the Chromecast, to your TV.
So by default, the apps it's provided with let you do Netflix and Google Play Video and YouTube.
Okay.
Whereas he had an app which basically let you stream any video stream from your device.
So if you had like local media on a server at home, which, you know, many
people
do, then you could stream it directly to your TV without having to use a third party service like YouTube and subscribe to Netflix or whatever. And he claimed in a post on Google Plus that it stopped working because Google changed something in the API.
So what did Google have to say about this?
What did they say, Mark?
They said that the current SDK is a developer preview and they want to provide a great experience for users and developers before making the SDK and additional apps more broadly available. They didn't say they want to allow people to do what he was trying to do specifically.
But also they didn't say that somebody just messed up and broke it.
Yeah. So it's essentially, you know, they're still trying to decide exactly what it's going to have before they say it's finished and apps will continue working as they are developed.
Yeah, to be fair, they might provide a different API for playing local content. Yeah. That's entirely possible. That reason they've given that the current SDK is a developer preview, That sounds exactly what we say when the phone breaks.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like the Ubuntu Touch excuse.
It's not ready yet.
Somebody probably just renamed things.
Well, possibly.
I mean, it's that simple.
But if you rename things, don't you also document the new names?
Well, it's preview, isn't it?
Well, interestingly,
get around to it eventually.
Yeah. It's has been announced today by Kushik that the Google Chromecast team have apparently invited him for lunch on Friday.
Well, is that to discuss his needs or to shut him up?
Well, who knows?
It's not the mafia.
Are you implying that Google are going to eat him? They're inviting him for lunch.
In a public place?
No, I just thought they might give him such a nice lunch that he no longer wishes to complain about Google.
Right.
They do good food.
Lunches.
Yeah, their burritos are very nice.
Yeah.
The butter's breakfast.
After four of those, you can't talk anyway.
So what else is in the news?
Well, the big Ubuntu Edge campaign, the most successful crowdfunded campaign in the history of ever.
Was unsuccessful.
Absolutely failed to meet its target by a mere $20 million, or about two-thirds of its value.
Still.
So
it's not all,
say something nice, Laura.
It broke records.
Did it though?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. Did it not, Mark?
Well, did it still? If it wasn't successful, do the records still count?
Yes.
If it, because they're saying it raised more money than any campaign, but it didn't raise any money because didn't get the money.
Well, they had the money.
They had the money for a very short period in escrow.
Indiegogo had some money.
Yeah. Well, this is, people are saying, oh, well, it doesn't count because it was just pledged money. It wasn't real money. Well, actually, it was real money. The money went out of people's accounts. They paid that money.
Now, okay, so if it was on Kickstarter instead of Indiegogo, would it still have counted?
Well, I think there's a bigger debate around that, because that is just people saying, oh, yeah, I'll chip in.
Mm. And that's different. Yeah, I mean, that's different issues as well.
And sometimes those people who say, I'll chip in, don't actually pay out. Mm.
Exactly. Whereas the people who funded this project did pay the money. They had the money. They paid the money. It counted. So it did raise that money. You know, it did go where it was supposed to go.
It's one of those hotly debated things in the social blogosphere, or whatever you want to call it, where...
Please never say that again.
Noted. Where, you know, some people will argue that it didn't. It wasn't a record because the campaign didn't finish successfully. But, and I can understand that. And I can understand why people might have that opinion. But... the fact is, it still raised a truckload of money.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is worthy of note.
Was it still not a record pledge level anyway, if you call it a pledge?
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing about the Ubuntu Edge is that it's the Formula One of phones, or was going to be the Formula One of phones. And you think about it as a Formula One race. Somebody can get the fastest lap.
I'm just waiting for the punchline here.
This is a good analogy. I'm very proud of this.
He's looking.
Surprised it's not a Doctor Who analogy.
Right. Somebody can get the fastest lap of the race in lap three, for argument's sake, and then crash and burn in lap 10. They still had the fastest lap of the race.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, just because you don't necessarily go the full distance, you can still get the records early on.
That's true.
Yeah,
see, huh?
One thing that did occur to me, reading, there's an interesting analysis on the Guardian website. One thing that did occur to me is that the previous campaigns which have raised huge amounts of money have all raised a huge amount of money above their target, whereas this campaign raised a huge amount of money and didn't meet, like, more than they raised and still didn't meet its target. But it makes me wonder whether if it had a lower target, say 10 million, and it had reached that, would the buzz created around it reaching that huge target have gone on to...
But how much did those other ones raise overall?
Well, the biggest before was the Pebble Watch, which had raised about 10.2 million.
So it's still vastly less absolute terms money.
Yes.
But then it becomes much more of a gamble for the people behind the campaign.
That's true.
Because if they reach their lower target of 10 million, they have to make the thing. And presumably there were reasons why they wanted 32 million and not 10 million.
Yes. Absolutely.
Whereas, you know, if it costs 32 million and you set your target to be 32 million, fine. You either make it or you don't.
So the rationale for it being 32 million is because they wanted to make 40,000 devices, which is what we were told was the minimum order quantity. You're going to, you know, put your credit card down, you need to order 40,000 of these devices to get the bill of materials down to $830.
Yeah.
With the discounts, it came down to $600 for the first 5,000, but that didn't sustain it through the rest of the campaign.
Mm.
But Jane Silber has said that Canonical still plans to bring an Ubuntu phone to market for early 2014.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Just a slightly less cool one.
Yeah, not a Formula One, maybe a banger. Different kind of race analogy.
You should work in marketing.
No, I absolutely shouldn't.
The first Ubuntu touch phone will be a Vauxhall Viva with a knocking noise.
Nice callback. Laura, what else has been in the news?
Microsoft CEO Steve Linux = Cancer Ballmer has announced he is to retire within 12 months.
Oh,
Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know, really. It depends who's taking over.
Well, there is that. But he's certainly not been a friend to Linux and open source over the years, although he has...
Although he's overseen Microsoft being more open than they have been in the past, even though he was a bit hostile before.
It's hard to know whether he had any influence over that opening up and the creation of the Microsoft Open Technologies Group or whatever it's called. You know, it's hard to know, given, you know, there's always the excuse that Microsoft is a huge company and they do so many different things, and you can't blame the entire company for you know, failures in one division, like, you know, the Zune or the Kin.
But presumably, if the CEO was fervently against the idea of there being Microsoft Open Technologies...
You'd think he'd know about it.
Do you think he would have said, wait a minute, not on my watch?
I'm not convinced he's completely against Open Technologies. He was against the GPL.
Yes.
And was against the fact that the GPL spreads from one product to another if you use one product inside another.
He's not the only one.
Yeah, yeah, true. And, you know, that's... Yeah. Okay.
Yes, but we don't know who's going to replace him, and I'm sure he'll have a good retirement. I think he's made a quid or two, isn't he?
Yes, with his huge amounts of Microsoft stock, which,
jumped
hugely when he announced that he was going to retire. It's enormous, the amount that they jumped.
Yeah, 9% or something?
Yeah. That would be a good way to retire. Announce you're going to retire, wait for the stock to go up, dump all your stock.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll do a Bill and Melinda Gates and... go and cure something, you know, as bad or as significant as malaria?
You know, I don't even know what he looks like.
Big bald guy, usually sweating, usually jumping around quite a lot
yelling,
on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Developers or buy Windows 95 for $99.
I just don't think I've ever seen a picture of him.
You probably, if you saw his face, you'd probably recognise it.
It looks angry.
Yeah.
It's distinctive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
What else, Mark?
What else, Alan? Well, are we going to say that now?
Yes.
Or are we going to, okay. Tesla cars are vulnerable to a remote hijack. The Tesla Model S electric cars have been found to be vulnerable to remote hijacking because they have a REST API with some dodgy authentication.
Oh. Is their Tesla Model S not ready yet? Is it a developer preview?
No, I think it's an actual car that people have. Oh. And it has, presumably, it's got some sort of wireless access point built in, which you can connect to, and you can send it requests over an HTTP REST API. What,
like an AR drone?
Yes.
Can you fly it around like an
you
AR
drone?
You can't
fly it around, but you can open the sunroof, flash the lights on and off, which in an electric car is not ideal. If someone could sit there flashing the lights on and off all night when it's in the garage, and then you get up in the morning and the battery's dead.
Be annoying if it were in the street as well.
Yeah, it would. And, you know, yeah, you don't want people making it look like you're letting someone out of a junction.
Yeah.
Now, that could be fairly dangerous.
In the 1970s Doctor Who story, The Demons, John Pertwee had a remote control for Bessie, which did just that. It tooted the horn and flashed the lights, and he could steer the car from it as well.
And that was the 1970s.
Was his authentication a bit more secure? Presumably he was the only one with the technology on the planet.
He's a Time Lord. That's his authentication.
Okay, yes. So, yeah.
He looks so pleased with himself when he said that.
This could be perhaps a wake-up call, because we're going to start seeing, you know, if this is happening at the moment, it's only going to get more so with newer cars who want to have the latest feature. So it might be a bit of a wake-up call for companies to say, oh, maybe we should think about this better next time.
We should talk about this in the next episode, maybe. Have a bit of a chat around some of the issues. Cool. Laura, what's the next story in the news?
Netflix on Linux.
Hooray!
Yeah!
So
what's Netflix?
There's another Netflix is like Love Film.
Well, you can watch Doctor Who on Netflix.
Ooh.
Tell me more.
So there's another solution for allowing Netflix and other Silverlight based streaming services, called Pipelight, and it allows Linux web browsers to run Windows only browser plugins.
And it works.
Does it?
Yeah.
Have you tried it?
Yeah.
Cool.
I tried it on my my laptop, because I've got a Netflix account, and I often watch programs on Netflix, and I thought, I wonder if I'll be able to get that working, because the previous solutions involved you running a Windows browser under Wine on Linux, which seems a bit clunky, But that worked as well. But what Pipelight does is strip out the browser bit and you only run the plugin. So you actually run the Windows version of Silverlight in a Linux browser under Wine.
Yeah.
And it works. You get Netflix in a browser. And it just works. Mm. I ended up filing a bug against it because Netflix is a bit finicky about the user agent string, and obviously my Linux browser is telling Netflix that I'm a Linux user, so Netflix was like, no, that's not going to work. That's not going to work at all, and rejects you. But if you fiddle the user agent string just for that one site and say for Netflix.com, set my user agent to Windows Firefox version 17, it works.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
But should we not be using things that work natively on Linux anyway, alternative services?
We should not use Netflix, even though you already have a Netflix account, because it doesn't work on Linux.
Well, shouldn't we be saying to people, don't get a Netflix account, get your stuff through Google Play, because that works on Linux?
Well, yeah, okay, that's good. And up until the program you actually want to watch isn't on Google Play or isn't on Amazon, and the content you want is siloed inside Netflix, and you want to watch that content. I'm sure Tony would side with me. If he wanted to watch Doctor Who, he'd sign up with Netflix if it was the only platform.
Oh, don't get him
on
your side with the Doctor Who.
I thought that would work.
Bait.
Well, thanks to the unique way the BBC is funded, I can get it on the TV and then, record it and watch it on DVD or Blu-ray.
And we don't have Netflix anyway.
No. No, it's a good story, though. Well done, Alan. Enjoy.
That's the end of the news.
His was a better Doctor Who story.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that tickles, titillates, or taunts you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. We really would like to hear from you, so go on, do your duty, keep calm and compose an email.
It's time for the community news and events.
Woo!
First up this time around, the new VUDS, Virtual UDS, has just started. So there are some activities going on for the rest of the week.
No. It's 3 days. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Oh, okay.
Until tomorrow. Today, if you're listening to the download,
or until last week.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, okay. So what's going on for until tomorrow?
So this is one of our mid-cycle UDSs. Typically, we used to have real-world UDSs, which were immediately after a release, and they would be for planning the next release. We're now doing UDS every 3 months as a virtual thing. So the one after the release is still planning for the next release. But the one in the middle of a cycle, which is what we're at now, is planning the remainder of this cycle.
Right.
So leading up to the end of this cycle, which is the end of October, the release date of 13.10.
Is it an opportunity to kick out ideas that aren't going to make it and... reprioritize things a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's partly it, to get rid of stuff that we know we're not going to be able to do by 13.10. It's a realignment of goals. It's a checkpoint, if you like, to make sure that we're...
You can tell the manager doing... now.
I watched Jono's introduction to UDS, you see. Listened to Mark's keynote speech. So, yes.
Realigning your goals.
Are these videos available to watch back on YouTube as well?
So... Interestingly, yes.
Ah,
they're cool. They're all done in the same way we're doing this, via Hangouts on Air.
Yeah.
And we make it as open as possible for people to join. Mm. So when a session starts, we post the link, and if you want to join in, you can join. Obviously, there's a limited
Whatever age you are.
Well, yeah, there's an interesting thing about that. Tony, tell us more about the age limit.
Yeah, somebody called Howard Chan has written a blog post, which ended up on Planet Ubuntu, saying that he can't participate in VDUDS because he's under 18. In order to join a Hangout on Air, you have to be 18 or over.
It's a VUDS, not VDUDS. just to clarify.
Visual Display Unit Developer Summit.
Yes.
So you have to be over 18 to join a Hangout on Air, and Hangout on Air are the things that are used for the face-to-face video discussions as part of VUDS.
Does that mean that people can't watch... this either unless they're over 18, or is it only if you actually want to be one of the participants?
Yes.
Right. Not if you want to watch the stream.
Correct.
Right. Okay, anybody can watch, but in order to participate, you have to be over 18.
Yes.
So lots of people have been saying, well, just tell them you're 18, fake your age, which
that's
isn't...
That's exactly what I told him to do.
Which isn't a difficult thing to do, but, you know, there's a point of principle here. he can participate, or anybody under 18 can participate via IRC and the other methods, but, you know, I can see it would be nice to have a method that was totally inclusive.
I agree.
But unfortunately, there isn't one that is free.
Well, so some people suggested instead of using Hangouts, we should use Mumble. Mm-hmm. Because there isn't a huge benefit to us having the webcams on, because what you actually see is us typing in IRC, typing in Etherpad, looking up blueprints on Launchpad. What you're actually watching is us, like, eyes all over the place, not actually staring at the camera, looking at people and, you know, eye contact. And you miss some of those body language cues. Mark talks about this in the keynote, that one of the things he misses from UDS is the corridor conversations and being able to check people's body language and how they're expressing themselves, and that's difficult to do over IRC or indeed Mumble, and it's also not that easy on a webcam where all you see is like the top third of someone's body and you don't get to take in the rest of it. So yeah, it's tricky, and we're reviewing every time we review. We have a post UDS review to figure out whether we should carry on doing virtual UDSs or whether we should have physical in-person UDSs, and it's all up for discussion, and Jono's curating that discussion, so tell Jono.
That's jono@canonical.com.
exactly.
Okay, the next item, Mark, what have you got for us?
Nicholas Skanks has written a blog post calling for users running Saucy to test Mir with multi-monitor setups. So presumably this means that Mir has now had the required hammering to get it working with multi-head setups. Like,
yes, exactly. So cool. It apparently works with dual screen. I haven't tested that yet, but some people in the community have.
Mm-hmm.
And the blog post that Nick's written tells people what specifically we're looking for and how to test it and how to report success or failure.
Cool. Brilliant. Okay, Laura, there's some exciting audio news. Tell us about that.
Ubuntu Touch is now using Pulse Audio and Alsa for sound rather than Android's Audio Flinger.
Right. What's Audio Flinger?
It's Android's audio layer.
Right.
So Surface Flinger is the compositor, the desktop.
Right.
Audio Flinger is the audio stack, and then there's other bits.
Right. They're all called Flinger?
No, they're not. No, that just happens to be that one.
So why is it good that we're not using Audio Flinger anymore?
Well, we're slowly replacing each of the bits with the standard bits that are in the Ubuntu stack on your desktop. So it kind of makes more sense for us to have the same software on all of them.
Yeah.
So that it's easier for us to support that software across all of them. We don't control Audio Flinger in any way. So Google could do something with Audio Flinger, and then, you know, we lose our audio stack on the device.
Yeah.
So that's partly the reason. It's really just commonality, so we have the same stuff. You know, Mark's vision that he's talked about numerous times that we've reported on, which is the same stack across, you know, your phone, your tablet, your fridge, your TV, your desktop, whatever. You can't do that if bits of the stack aren't you know, something that you control or can massage to your ends. And you know, we have no control over Surface Flinger or Audio Flinger.
I guess it makes sense. Pulse Audio's come on leaps and bounds over the last 4 or 5 years or so, and it's really quite good now.
Yeah, I agree. I know there was a lot of flack, and you know, I'm sure people, when they saw this this blog post from David Henningsen, said, you know, oh great, I can SSH into my phone and kill Pulse Audio to fix it or something. Which, yeah, you can. Isn't somebody that amazing? Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah. Somebody should write an app for that, a big kill Pulse Audio button that sits on the desktop, or whatever the Ubuntu Touch equivalent thereof is.
Mm.
Right, okay. The current reapproval process for the local community teams, or locos, is being replaced with a biannual health check process designed to be more interactive and give the loco teams a chance to catch up with the loco council.
Why is that then?
Well, I don't really know.
Because he hasn't read it.
I did read it. I think I even put it in the notes. But I didn't quite pick up on why they wanted to do this.
So it was quite a heavyweight process to approve loco teams.
Because there's verified loco teams.
No. Well, sorry.
Did they get a tick?
We originally called them approved loco teams.
Yeah.
And now they're called verified logo teams because I think people didn't like the word approved because it meant those who aren't approved are disapproved. Yes. We disapprove of them.
Yeah.
So you know, it's all about language, and we've got loco teams all around the world for whom English is not their first language, and maybe the word approved translates to something, you know, negative for them. So verified teams would have to come to the local council and document everything they do, I think, after 2 years. And this is quite somewhat onerous for them to do.
Yeah.
Whereas it's a lot easier if we just like regularly check in with them and say, hey, how are you doing? Do you need any help? Anything wrong? Any problems? Anything we can do to help? Which I think is what that whole health check is about, to make sure they're, you know, not doing something terrible or, you know, not abusing their position in the community.
Fair enough. Excellent. Sounds like a good plan. Mm. Get verified logos. Okay, what's happened, Mark? Next story.
Next story. 12.04.3 has been released, containing an updated kernel and X stack. I know it's what you've been all been waiting for.
So this is an updated version of the last LTS release, yeah. Just with all the extra bits, bobs, and security updates in the ISO image. So if you're deploying new systems, you just use that instead of the old one.
Yes, and a new kernel.
Which means latest device drivers as well.
Exactly. Right. So cool. if you're buying a server now, you know, if you use the 1204 image or 1204.2, it's possible that there's, I don't know, SATA drivers or some kind of driver required by the server that the old kernel wouldn't support, and so this makes it a lot easier.
Cool. Brilliant. Alan, what's happening in the Ubuntu women world?
They're having an scavenger hunt with prizes to be won.
Excellent.
Ubuntu jewellery included.
Yes.
A bit. Anyway,
they're also running they're also running a survey about Ubuntu women and what you think of the project and whether you know about it, and loads of questions about, you know, how they can improve things. So
we'll be linked in the show notes if you want to participate.
We certainly will.
The first prize I should add is a Logitech webcam.
Yes.
Like the one that I'm using to make my face all pixelated on the internet right now. But yes, the jewellery and earrings and things are from Boutique Academia with Ubuntu logos.
Yeah, they do actually look quite cool. If I wore earrings, I would really quite
They get
like
all
them.
Knotted in your hair, wouldn't they? Especially if you've got right dangly ones.
Right. Moving
anyway.
And finally,
you go, Tony. Why
not? The Loco Council is calling for nominations. Three positions have been made vacant, and they want people to stand to participate Loco Council.
This isn't the same thing as the Community Council, is it?
This is the Loco Council.
Right.
This is what's going to be doing health checks.
Yes.
Getting out the rubber gloves and asking people to cough.
So if you were interested in what we were just talking about, the health checks, then check out the link in the show notes to find out how to be nominated, presumably, for the Community Council. Can you nominate yourself?
You could nominate yourself.
Or nominate yourself. Yes. Excellent.
Brill. And there's some events to talk about. There's a first one, which is Ohio Linux Fest. And that includes UbuCon for the first time in a couple of years. It's being held on September 13th to 15th. And here's a message.
And we're back. Yes, after a year off, Ubuntu Ohio returns to present a new UbuCon at Ohio Linux Fest. Catch us on Friday, September 13th at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. No, it isn't Odd Camp America, but it is how we roll here in the Buckeye State. Register for Ohio Linux Fest at ohiolinux.org. Remember, that's O-H-I-O. We'll be seeing you.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
Yes. We also have on the Friday, the 27th of September, the Revolution Conference.
The what?
I wasn't sure how to pronounce that. The R is in brackets. It might be a registered trademark symbol gone wrong. Revolution Conference being held in Shrewsbury Shop.
That's easy for you to say.
Shrewsbury in Shropshire. Mm-hmm. And you can find out more at 2013.shropgeek-revolution.co.uk, which we will put in the show notes.
We'll try and clear up all the spittle off it first. Yes.
Excellent. And OggCamp as well.
Of course. We have our first sponsor in place.
Oh, yes. Who's that?
The OggCamp community.
Yay.
They are now our first gold sponsor because we've had such success with our Pay What You Want tickets.
Lots of people have been very generous.
Yes, very generous indeed. So we've decided that they should be get the recognition as our first gold sponsor.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and it's really helped us get the event off the ground, make sure that we've got enough to cover our upfront costs. So thank you very much, everybody. And we should have a bit more information. We're just confirming some more sponsors and some speakers. So we should have some more information by the next show.
Yeah, we are looking for exhibitors, though. So if you're interested in having a stand, if you're a community project or got something you want to show off, let us know. You can email us at the podcast and we can pass the message on.
Yeah.
And you can tell people about what you're up to.
And if you want a bit of kudos, then we're always looking for prizes for our raffle.
Yeah, give us some prizes for the famous raffle cast. Excellent. So come to OrcCamp and we'll see you. Oh, gone.
Am I going to have to run up and downstairs giving raffle prizes to people?
Yeah. So if you want to see Alan running up and downstairs, give us lots of prizes for him to give out.
Yeah.
It's the only reason I go.
You know, I deliberately joined a gym this week, so I wouldn't get laughed at quite so much. I actually have to go to the gym now.
Yeah, I was going to say, joining it is not enough. No. You've got 2 months. Yes. So come and see Buff Alan at OrcCamp.
And that's all for this episode. Join us next time when we'll be discussing the pros and cons of the Internet of Things, reading your feedback, and making your life just a little bit easier with some command line love.
Excellent.
Mm.
Yes.
Oh, apparently we forgot to mention Software Freedom Day, which is on the 19th of September.
Don't.
Excellent. Well, participate in that. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
Cool.
Anyway, thanks for listening and watching. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.